Can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's Mike Shope.
Hey, put a little bit. I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey, put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Just to finish our previous conversation, do we know what these are called?
Portable charger docks.
Portable charger docks.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We were gifted these things. We've had a few of these in our house over there. We take them on vacations with us.
Do they ever become useful? Like you plug multiple devices into it when it's charged and you're like out cutting down a Christmas tree or something.
Sure.
Right? Or on a plane.
I have never had a need for this item. I don't. I'm sort of a psycho about keeping my stuff charged.
Okay.
All the time. You know, and everyone is different like this. One of my sons and I are alike this way, and my other son and my wife are people who will be sitting there on their phone, and it's at 2%. And they're not thinking, I should plug this in. Eventually, they get around to it because it dies, and then they plug it in. But I often will just sit when I'm at home working at night or in the morning or afternoon before I come here. I've got a charger nearby. My iPad is plugged in, and I'm using it, but it's fully charged.
How many miles tend to be in your gas tank when you get gas? I mean, how many, how much left?
I recently got below a quarter tank for the first time in probably 20 years.
Can you believe that?
I'm not even kidding.
You never let it get below a quarter tank.
I shouldn't say that. On road trips, it probably regularly gets lower because, you know, but around here, like in town, I'm half.
That's so strange to me.
It's part I'm a psycho, and it's also, you know, what comes with not having to be anywhere at an exact time all that often. You know, like we don't have a clock to punch here. So if I'm coming to work and I'm a little bit earlier than I feel like I need to be here by, and I look at my gas tank and it's not super windy or nasty out, I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to fill up the tank now. Because I got 2 minutes and it's not that bad out. So I'd rather have it full now, and you know, that way I don't have to do this when it's a blizzard.
My whole thing is like getting gas as close to zero as possible when you're as close to empty as possible, because the amount you spend at the gas pump is like how it fills. It always like is the full tank or almost the full tank.
Mm-hmm.
So to live in a world where it's between a quarter and a half, and there'd just be so much variance in what that final dollar amount would be.
Yeah, I can't exactly tell you how much it costs to fill up my truck.
Right, because you never leave it.
I haven't had it empty in so long that I honestly don't know. Like I could do the math for you. Like, I mean, I think it's around a 22-gallon tank, I'm guessing. So whatever. But I never have it that close to empty.
Okay. Well,
I'm very
interesting.
And I'm like this, if I happen to run an errand in my wife's car, I will always fill her car up while I'm out in it. Well, not always. I mean, if it's
why would you ever be doing that?
If it's three,
one of your kids has your car,
yeah,
for some reason,
or she needed the truck to help her, you know, okay, someone with something, whatever. I mean, there are scenarios where that can't happen.
Okay.
And yes, I will then like, all right, I'm going to fill your tank up.
We have, so that's
all seven.
Mostly covered. That's mostly covered for today.
Yeah.
We have Joe Ostrowski today from BetQL Daily. We'll have Sal on as well. And then the Sabres are in Ottawa tonight for a 6 o'clock pregame show, Steve Foley Law pregame show, and then 7:05. It's Thursday, and I spent a little bit of time on props for these playoff games. Okay. Plus, we have Joe today. Do you have, this might be like not an easy, well, an almost impossible question. I don't know. Like, we're still living in this world where everybody gets the ball for the Bills. That's both teams in this game. Like, there's no obvious, with Denver or with Buffalo, other than Allen, like, there's no obvious, got to stop this guy. Got a key on, well, I don't mean Keon Coleman.
Keon, but
you don't have a guy here, right, for either team that's right. So obvious. So I wonder, does anybody have a player in, you know, apart from Allen, a player in this game that you like for some certain reason? With the Bills receivers, Cooper was away. He's been in and out. I'm drafting these playoff best ball teams every day, and I've gotten the 101 plenty of times, which is Allen in these drafts. And then it's about filling in other Bills. And when I get to Cooper, Coleman, Kincaid, they're like all the same to me. For the whole playoffs. That's not just the Denver game.
Mm-hmm.
But for the whole postseason, Shakir is a little bit above. Cook is above. And then Shakir. And then it's like anybody. Hollins, you know, it's like anybody after that. So I guess I just wonder whether it's specific to playing Denver. And by the way, I just took a quick glance. I thought your sweatshirt was orange. I thought you were making a statement, but it's more red than orange. Is there a certain like order here, pecking order, one player you like for the game? Why should I not have said that about your shirt?
I'll tell you off the air. Nobody okay. needs to hear me tell okay. you this on the air. I would say Sutton. I'm not looking at the. I'm looking at the Broncos receiving stats. Sutton has like 40 more catches than any other receiver on the team. I think that like he is. I think the guy that I would. You know, it's 81 catches, 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns. I mean, those aren't like I'm the best receiver in the league numbers or even really close, but they're nice. So I feel like if there is a guy on Denver that I'm thinking most about, it's him still.
He's 80 catches and who's second?
81 catches. Receiver-wise, Vele is the second leading receiver with 41.
That's a
Javonte Williams has 52, but he's a running back.
That's a smaller gap than the Bills.
Really?
Just receivers?
Yeah.
Shakir 76, Hollins 31.
Okay. All right, so it's very similar in that way. Although Sutton's a very different player than
well,
Shakir is.
Would you think of Shakir like this then, for Denver or just in general?
It's funny that this lines up this way and that we ended up here. I obviously did not plan this, but he's the guy that I'm waiting to say that I think is the key to the whole thing. I think Surtain, especially in the red zone, if I'm Denver, I'm going to put Surtain on Cooper, I think, and just take him away. So, okay, there's one and one. You're done there, probably, how they play it. And, you know, I don't know that means Allen will necessarily go away from Cooper, that Cooper can't, you know, win his share of reps there, but Surtain is excellent, and so that might just be kind of a dead zone. And I feel like the slot guy usually, now, unless it changes. Maybe Denver comes into this game. Maybe Denver is doing the same thing in a vastly more sophisticated way than we are.
Well, but I don't appreciate that.
Looking at the Bills receiver and going like, well, Shakir's the guy. Like we should put Pat on Shakir. Like he's the money guy.
You have their stats. What's Sutton's yards per catch?
13.3.
And Shakir is 10.8. 4 touchdowns. Is it not just, by the way, is it not incredible that the Bills won 13 games while having one wide receiver catch more than 31 passes?
Yeah, it is.
Allen is probably going to win the MVP.
And it's not like Kincaid smashed either.
44.
Yeah.
I mean, with one wide receiver catching more than 2 passes a game,
everybody eats.
That's not even eating. I'm not trying to start anything, but that's barely eating. But, I mean, really, 31. Shakir, 76. Kincaid, 44, which is not even great. Cook, 32. I would never have guessed it would be less than that.
Mm-hmm.
That's 2 a week. And then 31 for Hollins and Samuel. Samuel works his way to a tied for second in catches among Bills wide receivers.
After a year where it was, you know,
where
it's pretty easy to forget that he was on the team.
Where
at,
is he?
At times for me. So
at 8 yards per, by the way, not much. So anyway, Sutton is for you. Like Shakir, it's really the same for me as it always was on him. I'm impressed with how he plays. You know, obviously for the draft capital, he's a win. But, like, there's no touchdowns, and there's hardly ever, like, a big game, right? It's just the floor is high when it comes to Shakir. And you need that. This team needs that. But the guy I think, I don't know, like, I feel that I'm probably going to be wrong here picking one. The guy I think I want for these rosters is Cooper. I mean, Cooper's had half a season. He was hurt. Then he missed last week. But he caught 20 passes for the Bills in 8 games. That's 2.5. Anyway, it's a better rate than the other guys, but still.
The thing that would push me to consider him as like this guy, if we're talking about like what we talk about, leading receiver, go-to guy, however you want to phrase it. The thing that mostly would lean me toward him has nothing to do with how he's looked playing or what the matchup is and whether the opposing team has a shutdown corner that they may just mark up on him or whatever. It's simply that he has been at a top level his entire career, basically. And the Bills, they still haven't really, there hasn't been a validation for like, oh, they got that guy now. And, you know, if you think maybe they've just been squatting on that the whole time here, he was injured, missed some time. By the time he came back, they pretty much were clinched, at least for the division, you know, and kind of coasted to the 2 seed once the 1 was off the table. Maybe you think they're just waiting to, like, spring a whole new bunch of stuff, and Cooper is the focus of it. That could happen. I mean, I'm saying it like I'm a little sheepishly suggesting it because, I can't get all the way there to advocate like, oh, this is going to happen, but it could. Like, I mean, I had the thought, myself. I kind of dismissed it, but it's possible that, you know, Cooper comes out a Sunday and you're like, oh wow, I did not see 8 for 125 and 2 coming. Because there's no indication that that's going to be their offense. But, you know, all it takes is for, you know, a game to happen where they're, dusting off stuff that they have not been using.
8 for 125 and 2?
I just made that up. Yeah, right.
That's massive. His, at BetMGM, over-under yards is 24.5.
24.5.
Amari Cooper?
Yeah, wow.
Catches are 2.5. And under 2.5 is -190. Allen's completions, 21.5. Over is +100. The money's on under 21.5 completions.
Okay, that to me means people think the Bills are going to win this game comfortably.
Okay.
Right?
Yep. Like that's the spread.
Allen especially there. I mean, Cooper, I don't know how much difference. he hasn't filled the stat sheet up, so it's not that jarring, I guess, that those numbers are that low.
It is and it isn't.
Allen's being that low to me, it's not surprising because of the year he's had. It's jarring in that he hasn't produced more, and therefore there's not more expected from him. But Allen's number being that low to me has to be that you think they're ahead by 14 points all afternoon and don't have to bother throwing the ball, I think, because 21 completions is really low.
I guess. I don't feel like I have a sort of an intuition on that number because the Bills have had plenty of games like that, and what are his numbers in those games, right? We had a guy yesterday who pointed out that the Bills have had, I'm not sure I know the exact numbers, but 8 of their 23 losses.
Those are the numbers.
Going back to the Houston playoff loss, were games where they led by 2 scores. And I didn't spend much time on that today, and I'm sorry about that. But my guess is that they sort of took their foot off the gas.
Tell me how sorry.
With the lead. Very, very sorry. I did not spend more time. I was at the fun team meeting.
Can you elaborate?
That's my number one excuse, blaming the fun team.
Fun team meeting?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm on the fun team. Wow. We have a meeting every month.
I didn't know that there was a monthly meeting.
How
for the
do
fun
you
team.
Think?
Another reason
listen,
why I'm not on the fun team.
How do you think all these fun things
I don't have time for a weekly meeting
around here? How do you think they end up happening? People have to plan it, and you know, come up with ideas,
yeah.
Like the Super Bowl, which, by the way, is SOUP, so I don't get sued for saying the big game. It's, we're not calling our chili cook-off that we're going to have, the soup cook-off, the big game, because that doesn't make sense.
There's so much happening right now.
I know.
Super Bowl, yeah. Chili cook-off,
but it's not, what's not happening. What's not happening is like these Bills receiver props. That's what's not happening.
Well, you know what? To hell with the receiver props.
Okay.
I don't care about the receiver props. Nobody cares about the receiver props anymore. You've been talking about the receiver props all friggin' year in here.
Yep.
And like, who's going to catch the ball? All they do is score 31 points a game with nobody catching the ball, apparently. Like, so I don't know. I don't care anymore. I'm not worried about it. You can't make me worried. Not that you're necessarily trying to make me worried. You're trying to have a conversation.
Well, you're the one pretending that you haven't cared about it at all either. Like... We both kind of shared in that, but okay,
yeah.
That's right. You're right. Somebody should say it. Not counting Week 18, the Trubisky game, they've scored 24 points or more every week since Week 6, 30 or more every one of those games but one, New England. It's happening somehow. It's happening because you get like a couple of passing touchdowns to various guys,
right.
And Cook gets one and Allen gets one.
Right.
One per game for each guy.
There's four
over
touchdowns
the
a game.
The season. There's your four touchdowns.
That's it. Mix in the odd defensive score. They've had a ton of those, but whatever. And yeah, there are your points. So yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I know it sounds crazy because all year, I like refuse to believe. That's one of the reasons I love the Cooper trade so much, that they went and did it. Like, you know, oh, well, it's better if you don't have a guy. Well, no. I mean, it'd be better if you had three guys, right? I need guys that can get open. I need guys that can create separation. Like, I'm going to need that. And so, you know, I had my fun with Everybody Eats. But eventually, like, I'm at a point now where I actually like about this matchup that one of the things, if the Bills still had Stephon Diggs, we'd be in here, I think, okay, should they move him to the slot? What do you think? How much play action? Trying to find ways to get him away from Surtain. And I don't have to worry about that anymore. And if they want to have him lock down Amari Cooper, fine. I'm going to throw the ball to Khalil Shakir and Keon Coleman and whoever else is single covered or even doubled. Whatever, it's going to happen. Like I'm going to find my way. And like it doesn't feel as crippling to have an elite corner, a shutdown corner on the other side, because I don't really know what to do with him if I'm Denver in this game. Like, I think by default I put him on Cooper, but I don't know. Like, do I really need to do that even? But I don't know. I just sort of feel like he's so good that me not having a counterpart in the skill department, you know, a receiver that warrants his attention, is kind of a win for me.
That I respectfully, because I can hear how annoyed you are by this receiver's point coming up again here, but I would like to bring up part of the conversation over the course of the season. I remember asking Eric Wood this, and undoubtedly you and I have talked about it maybe 10 times. As the season went along and the Bills kept winning, is it settled? Is this experiment, as you put it in the summer, is it over? Because they won the division and, hey, anything can happen in the playoffs, you know, miss a field goal, one bad bounce. Like, if it's like that, and you won 13 games with, what were they, second in the league in scoring, with maybe the MVP quarterback, is it reasonable to consider it a failure if this week or some other week, like, nobody gets open, and Allen runs out of time and gets sacked and forces a ball, they get behind, throws a pick, like, oh, well, I mean, you don't want to hear me be like, told you. If they go win 15 games first, like, I don't think I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the whole experiment, again, that word, is about now. Like, that's why you maybe didn't want to do it. And you don't have you can't have total control over it either.
Yeah.
They did trade Diggs, but it's not like you can just go get whoever you want to have be on your team. I still think, to some extent, it's reasonable to think this whole thing is yet to be determined whether it's been a success.
I think the move for Cooper is informative about answering that question, because it wasn't working. Like there was a problem here. It was back-to-back losses, but they got locked up in those games, and their passing game was basically Allen scrambling around. Like the big plays in the Baltimore game and even the Houston game were largely like busted sort of plays.
Mm-hmm. And there weren't many.
Right. And then they made the move for Cooper. So the fact that Cooper hasn't performed and they haven't used him like Diggs does not, you shouldn't ignore the fact that they felt they needed to do it and have done it, and I think have gotten, it's been useful, even if he's not piling up stats. Having a guy does prove useful. So I don't know. I don't want to say the season certainly is far from a failure offensively. However modest their receiving stats are, they did score a ton of points, second in the league. And the quarterback is, like you just said, you know, the MVP favorite. Whether he wins it or not, we'll see. So from the initial plan to having to get Cooper, I would say everybody eats didn't really work. They felt like they needed to augment that, so they went and did it. So I don't know. I'm not at all here advocating for re-signing Cooper, but you damn well better replace him, I think. I think it matters to have a guy that can even just instill the idea that he's going to beat you bad one-on-one if you try to man up and play man on this team. So I think wide receiver train will be boarding again, however this season ends, because Cooper is a free agent, and at his age, I'm not crazy about paying him $25 million or more or whatever it would take at this point to keep him here. If it's, you know, more reasonable than that, then, you know, I'd consider it, but I think they're going to have a hole to fill there.
What about Tyreek? He said he's out.
To hell with him.
You don't want him?
I don't want any part of that. No.
His numbers, by the way, came way down.
I think the cliff comes for small, fast guys. I don't think that lasts forever. So I'd be very, very buyer beware on Tyreek Hill.
Diggs at 30 went out.
Yeah.
Tyreek at 30, 31.
Yeah.
Devontae Adams did all right.
Yeah.
And Cooper. 803-0550, Bills and Broncos, Sunday at 1. Joe Ostrowski, Sal Capaccio, and then at 6, Paul Hamilton with the Steve Foley Law Sabres pregame show, Sabres in Ottawa. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. We'll look for your calls next. This is WGR.
I feel like this team this year is in a different space than we were last year. I feel like last year we kind of peaked too early, because I think we were like 5-6, and we just had to win every game to even make it a contest. So I think we kind of peaked maybe too early, and we couldn't just sustain it. This year, I think we kind of just playing ball, and we haven't peaked at all yet. We haven't played our best game, even on both sides. Like, our offense has put up 40 points, but they'll tell you that that wasn't their best game. Defense, we played a few weeks ago with 0 points going into the fourth quarter, and we would still say we didn't play our best game. So we just got to just put it together and find a way to all be on the same page at the same time and peak.
Rasul Douglas, the Bills and Denver Broncos, their second ever postseason meeting, first being the AFC Championship in 1991. Actually, it's January 12th, 1992, so it'll be exactly 33 years to the day from that 10-7 Bills win over Denver to advance to Super Bowl 26. Remember Leonard Smith riding around the perimeter of the field of the stadium on a tractor or something, just saluting the fans after that game. Better than during.
Yeah, you rarely, you know, see that.
Scoreless in the fourth quarter, guys, maybe calm down and save the celebration.
Guys taking victory laps on Gators is not encouraged when you're in a scoreless tie.
We'll get to your calls in a moment. 803-0550. Did you see that Marty Baron was looking for Rob Ray stories?
I did see that.
You'd have better ones than I.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gave him one.
Yeah.
That you were there for.
I didn't. Oh, is this the Ranger guy?
The Ranger guy.
716.
Yeah.
At the bar.
Yeah.
That was a good one. You want to tell that now?
It was good. I don't remember it perfectly, I think.
Well, I can help.
A guy in a Ranger jersey was walking toward us on his way to the bathroom, I think. And Rob was sitting at that booth with us. And Rob said something to him. Your team sucks or something like
Rob
that.
Rob was in the middle of telling us how it's a speech he's multiple times I've heard him give. It's too nice now. Everybody's too nice.
Right.
All the players are friends, and there's just not enough animosity. You got to work on that. You got to just get an edge. And as he's, I don't know exactly what he was saying, but that was the spirit of what he was saying. This dude walked by, and he went, "Watch this." And he sort of cursed, or didn't curse. We were on the air. But he said something to the guy. Maybe it was before we started. Anyway, he said something to this guy. He was just kidding around. The guy was wearing a Ranger jersey. Definitely did not recognize Rob as former tough guy Rob Ray. Eventually got, went to the restroom, came back, and was sitting across the room from us with a friend.
At the bar.
Also in a Ranger jersey. And the guy that Rob had said whatever he said to was like, he looked like he wanted to fight Rob and or us.
Yeah.
That was basically
But it. Nothing else happened.
Nothing happened. No.
Maybe he found out who Rob was.
Yeah, maybe somebody told, like, he's over there on a radio show. I think, maybe he's a former player.
Was that the only time we heckled the crowd, not the opposite,
there? Yeah, right. Kevin Sylvester chimed in on Marty's tweet, because Kevin and I were, Kevin interned here at WGR when I was interning at WBEN in the summer of 94, before I got my show in the fall of 95. So we were running these sort of concurrent lives. Like, he had been at Fredonia while I was at Buff State. I'm a little older. I went to college later. But anyway, we knew each other from college. He loaned me some equipment one time when our stuff was broken so I could go on the road and do a Buff State football game, yada, yada. So we're both covering Buffalo Stampede roller hockey games.
Sure.
And there was a spell there. I don't remember how long. Maybe I'm not even sure if Rob could tell you how long it lasted, but he was the coach.
Yeah.
Very much a figurehead type position. I don't think he was really, getting in on the PK and power play with the guys on the Stampede. But
that hockey team was not afraid to make changes.
Yeah, right. So one time, I didn't suggest this. Kevin said, ask Bulldog. Me and Bulldog have got Stampede stories. I don't remember if Kevin was in the room with me for this or not, but it was a post-game scene. The Stampede had won the game, and I'm there waiting. I knew Rob a little because he had already been doing evening shows with Howard Simon at WBEN, which is where I was interning, and by that point, maybe working part-time. Anyway, I'm waiting for Rob to come out so I can ask him a few questions about the game and bring some tape back for Howard, so he's got cut up Rob Ray, Stampede coach.
Wow.
In the middle of the summer for sportscast, right? That's why I'm there.
Wow.
And I'm waiting for Rob. I'm the only one there. So I'm sorry, Kevin, if you were there for this and I don't remember it. I remember him walking out of maybe the main locker room, and I'm in this other auxiliary locker room, and he's got a dress shirt on that's completely unbuttoned. Right, so he's bare chested in a dress shirt and dress pants. His suit coat's gone, and he walks out of this room and looks at me like, "What do you want?" I'm like, "I'm here to do a post game interview with you." He's like, "All right, hang on a second." He reaches into this tub of beers. Rob has not been drinking for a very long time now, but in these days he still drank. He just grabbed a blue out of this tub of beers and opened it, slammed it, drank the whole beer, threw the can down and said, "Okay, let's go." And I did my, 4-minute Rob Ray post-game roller hockey interview, and it's one of my favorite moments with Rob. An absolute just beautiful moment. We've gotten to know each other much, much, much better over the years, but I barely knew him then, but it was still pretty cool.
Could you have had one with him?
I wasn't offered, and I did not feel the separation of church and state. I was media there. I'm not here to pal around with Rob Ray.
I have to just
a serious job to do here.
Your story is great. I'll slip this one in. When I was in Rochester just starting working at public radio, it was like one night a week, 1 hour, just me. I had to figure out the board, calls, everything. Like I was the one-man show. And I got Rob on when he was still playing. And I disconnected. I hung up on him twice. Remember, like, not knowing exactly how to do it. Like, I just, that's me, right? I just, is it this button or that button? And right. Somebody had told me, you got to lock them in, you know, do this thing with the buttons.
Yeah.
And twice I disconnected him. And the third time, I think maybe I just sort of put him on. He answered again. He was up for it. He didn't
blow you off. Yeah.
Didn't blow me off. And the third time, like, I'm just not going to. Maybe the idea might have been to take calls for him. That's why I needed to sort of lock him in on the bottom row.
Right, yep. Mm-hmm.
I just didn't bother.
I remember some of the mechanics of those sorts of systems. Yeah. I'm sure I mangled them numerous times like you just.
But that for sure would have been my first interaction with him, and I was just grateful that he
kept
answering.
My very, I think my first interaction with him, because it's the only time I've ever thought to shake his hand. So I think it was the day I met him in the old sports office at WBEN. I bet you he was coming in doing these evening shows with Howard Simon before I had a radio show. And so Rob would come in, and the first time I think he came in, I was introduced to him by a sales guy. And I said, oh, hi, really nice to meet you. I reached my hand out to shake his hand. And he had his hand sort of at his side and brought it out and, like, held it and, like, looked at me like, I'm not shaking your hand. His hand was, it looked like it had been through, like, just absolute utter hell. Like, I think, like, the knuckles were swollen out to the middle of the finger kind of thing. Like, you know, he's not in a cast or a brace or anything. He's just Rob Ray, professional face puncher. And he's like, I can't shake your hand. Like, oh, well, cool. Anyway, it's good to meet you. And, like, two nights later, he's out there absolutely just destroying his hand on Denny Vial's helmet. And I'm just thinking, like, you have the stupidest job that's ever happened. Because your hand is already, like, mashed to the point where you couldn't be able to hold a pencil or sign a check. And then, you know, 48 hours later, he's just wailing away at some dude's helmet. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. All these stories kind of make the same point. It's like we have a lot of respect for him.
Yes. Tons of respect for him.
Different examples.
Yeah.
Here's Brian on WGR. Go ahead, Brian.
How you doing, gentlemen? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm curious. We make such a big deal about Patrick Surtain, and I know that he's a good cornerback. I apologize. I haven't really followed Denver's defense over the course of the year with the exception of having them on my fantasy football team. But I'm looking at some of the teams that they played against in Denver's schedule, and the top wide receivers that they've played against are Ja'Marr Chase, where based on Ja'Marr Chase's stats, he looks like he torched the Broncos. Same with Ladd McConkey and same with Zay Flowers. So I'm wondering, and I don't even consider Zay Flowers and Ladd McConkey as these number one stud wide receivers that can wreck a game, but they still had amazing stats. So I'm curious as to where we get this information on Patrick Surtain that he's this amazing shutdown corner.
Well, it wouldn't be by just picking out examples of games where maybe he was covering or maybe he wasn't great players that did well. I mean, I'm not Greg Cosell, but I think he's considered the best in the league, and there'd be some reason for that. The games I would maybe point to if I were to make that case would be what I thought it was kind of cool that they used him on Bowers when they played the Raiders, and Adams may or may not have been on the Raiders anymore. The first game against the Raiders, Adams missed. But when they played him one or both times, they put him on Bowers, who led the league in receptions for a tight end, and that was successful. I know London did nothing against Denver. I don't know if he shadowed London, but, you know, just as your examples, you know, may or may not reflect exactly what Surtain's job was in those games.
And then
Mike Evans.
Right. It leads me back to your point. I just don't know what Denver thinks they're going to do with him. I just don't know who they think they're going to cover. Because if we're really operating under the everybody eats / everybody snacks situation.
Thank you.
Who would he follow?
Right.
Who would he blanket?
I know. Like, I agree with that. I don't know the answer, and I agree with that sort of analysis that in a couple of ways, including that one, it's not like a perfect matchup for Denver, right? Like they don't have someone, the Bills don't have someone obvious. That's what we're all saying here. And so maybe a team that did would be a simpler sort of math problem for the Broncos. Also, like, all the man defense sets up Allen to run wild on him if that's what ends up happening. So, yeah, I don't think it's – I mean, the Bills are not a great matchup exactly for anybody, but I think those particular facets of this make it less than perfect for Denver. He'll do something. Whoever he's covering,
right.
And that player will be covered.
And he may do a really good job of it. I think it makes sense to me that it's less valuable to have the guy if there isn't an obvious guy you want to try to take away. You know, because then what you end up, you're in like a chess match about moving the guy around and getting him away from it, if indeed he's following this player around. And maybe the Bengals did a good job of that when they faced Surtain. I mean, I don't know. I don't remember the game. But yeah, I mean, I have no doubt he's excellent. I'm sure it's based on coverage grades and, you know, successful passes and air yards against and all kinds of stuff that goes into determining. It's not just, oh, well, he looks good in the uniform, you know. I'm sure there's a lot of reason behind him being termed the best or one of the best. But I like everything about this matchup. For the Bills, it's a team that plays man. They've got an elite shutdown corner, and they get to the passer well. I think the Bills and they blitz a lot. I mean, that just reads like a perfect matchup for Josh Allen to me. You're going to try to blitz me? Okay, great. You're going to try to play man? Okay, great. you know, guys got to get open, but also the Allen running is can be triggered by that. So And the Bills are excellent at protecting the passer. I mean, Allen has a lot to do with that, his mobility, but their line has been very good all year. So I doubt that the Broncos is going to show up and wreak havoc in the Bills' backfield. And I think everything they try to do on the back end is predicated on that. So if you're not winning there, then I think you could be in for a long day. And that's why I just can't see this Denver offense being able to score enough. Because I think the Bills should be able to move the ball on this team.
Thanks, Brian. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Joe Ostrowski at 4. This is WGR. Playoffs week. Bills and Broncos Sunday at 1. The first game of the weekend, Saturday, 4:30. LA Chargers at Houston. Those are both, by the way, CBS games. This weekend, CBS has two games. I would think Nance and Romo would be ours, not the AFC South Invitational on Saturday afternoon.
I would be inclined to agree with that. Yeah,
it's probably known. Saturday night is prime, Pittsburgh, Baltimore.
All right.
Sunday afternoon late is Fox, and then as usual, Sunday night NBC, Monday night ESPN, probably ABC too.
Yes, that's what I see here, and ESPN Plus if you want it.
That game may end up being moved, the Monday night game.
Yeah.
Minnesota at the Rams, just horrific scenes from Southern California. My wife has a friend who lives in Santa Monica. I've been out there once to meet them. We stayed with them. It's a volleyball family. And my wife checked in with her friend yesterday, and her friend's, oh, she's fine. Like, they're just outside of it, at least so far. But literally 20 families in the volleyball organization lost their homes, burned to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Just the pictures are really tough to look at. What a devastation out there in Southern California. So whatever you can do, right? I mean, that's really, really sad. Here is CJ with us. Hi, CJ.
Hey, Shope. Hey, Bulldog. Good afternoon. And Mike, all the best to your family friend out there in California. That's really rough to hear. So hope everything's going well for them out there. Just a quick story about Rob Ray. Just I feel you guys might enjoy this just to hear how good of a guy Rob is. So back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the Sabres had this fundraiser called the Golf Gala where you would go and, you know, they'd do fundraising to be able to golf with the Sabres. And then what they did was they put like little mini putt courses like on like the concourse of the arena floor.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our first time as like a 9 or 10 year old kid going to meet, you know, Buffalo celebrities and athletes, right? So we get to meet Rob Ray, Afinogenoff, JP Dumont, those guys. Rob Ray goes, "Oh, do you play hockey?" I go, "Yeah, Rob, you know, I'm a right winger for the West Seneca Wings. I score goals." He goes, well, that's great to hear, kid. I beat up the goal scorers, like deadpan, and I'm just staring at him. He goes, oh, just kidding. So just, you know, just he had a really good way of, you know, being good to the kids, and just, you know, he's Buffalo through and through, and we're just happy to hear that he's finally getting elected, you know, for the Sabres Hall of Fame. So just a quick, cool little story about him. So
thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for bringing that up. I had occasion to watch him interact with fans dozens of times. I don't think it got to hundreds, but you know, these shows, eventually I got my own show and started going out on evenings, and Rob was a central figure in that. And he would always, I remember one at, there was a Runner's Roost location, I don't think it's been gone a long time now, but on Abbott Road in South Buffalo that we did a show at. And there was a line when I got there, like Rob didn't come on, I think, until 7 or maybe even 8. And I got there at 6 to start my show, and there was a line out the door around the block. And he, yeah, it was 7 to 8 because he got done at 8 o'clock, and he sat there probably until 9:30, still just signing. And always kind of different from what this guy said. Like, you know, kids would be there with their dads, and, you know, what do you say to somebody? Yeah, you got, I want to be like you. I love how you play. And he would like, no, man, like just scoring goals is where you try to encourage the kids to, like, you know, because they're, you know, they're 12 playing youth hockey. You don't really need to be knowing how to play like Rob Ray when you're 12. And he would always just sort of discourage that kind of talk, you know, like just go learn, work on your skating.
Rob didn't play like Rob when he was 12.
Right, that's right. Rob didn't play like Rob until he got to Rochester.
He was 20.
Really, I think. Yeah, right.
Yeah. He was often he's often somebody, as we would see at 716 many times, who would test you because people are nervous going up to him. You know, they're excited to meet him,
mm-hmm.
and they want to say something flattering. And he might say something back to you like he did to the CJ here, which is like he might make you wonder if
yep.
you're annoying him.
Right.
But he won't let it last. He'll eventually
right.
give up.
He is a classic. If he's not messing with you, it's because he doesn't like you. Like, that's how he is. Like, he just needs to be messing with you. That's years in locker rooms. I mean, not everyone's the same, but he's just one of those guys.
Joe Ostrowski, BetQL Daily, next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.